Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. All right, you guys, welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I've got kind of a fun conversation for us today. We talk a lot here on the podcast about clubs and how important they are, your national club, all this kind of stuff. Well, there's a different club that we don't talk about very often, but I'm familiar with and a lot of other people know. It's called the North American Versatile Hunting Dog Association, and it's actually a registry and a testing organization. And it's very important in the world of purebred dogs in the continental versatile hunting dog world. And so I had an opportunity and I thought this would be so cool. Jake Pardels is a member of NAVDA. He is a breeder and enthusiast of Epignol Breton. And he has some thoughts. He has some thoughts about clubs and all kinds of stuff. So welcome, Jake. It's so great to see you.
Thank you for having me on the podcast, Laura.
That's fantastic. All right, breeders, let's talk about the one thing we all wish we had more of. Time. Keeping whelping areas clean, managing potty training, and answering endless questions from new puppy owners, it all adds up fast. And that's where Brilliant Pad Pro comes in. It's the self-cleaning, automated potty system that saves hours of cleanup every week. It keeps your puppy's space hygienic, helps accelerate potty training, and even makes transitioning to a new home smoother. Best of all, when you send Brilliant Pad home with your puppies, you reduce accidents, cut down on support calls, and keep your clients happy. Want to see why top breeders are raving about Brilliant Pad? Save 10% on your Brilliant Pad order at Revival Animal Health. So talk to us about NAVDA. I mean, I gave the like half of a thumbnail sketch. So give us a little more detail on background on the organization.
Yeah, so NAVDA is an organization of about 10,000 members. Mm-hmm. It's mainly a testing organization. It gathers data in a registry, and that's where it houses the data, is through the registry. All of the tests are done per a standard. So it's you're judged against a standard. And each dog tested and each member has both a handler record and then the testing record for the dog. Mm-hmm. That data in an ideal world is used by breeders to then continue and better the breeds that we recognize.
And then it's super useful. I will say I just finished a book about wire hairs. And one of the things I talked about, go look at the NAVDA records because you can see every breeder, like every dog they've tested. Everything about them, their coat, their bite, their this, their that, all of it. And it is a fantastic record-keeping organization in that respect. I should also mention NAVDA and AKC have a kind of a reciprocal sort of relationship so that NAVDA dogs right. and AKC dogs are not mutually exclusive, right?
Correct. And I don't believe they show any of each other's titles on their pedigrees, but no. They recognize each other's pedigrees. So yeah. if you're in the AKC as a purebred German wire-haired pointer mm-hmm. and you yep. apply to get registry in NAVDA, they will recognize that. You don't need to provide much additional data.
Yeah, I've done it a number of times. You know, I've got an AKC bred registered dog that I want to test in the NAVDA system. I send him a 3-generation pedigree and bada bing, bada boom, that dog is registered and eligible to be tested. So
right.
talk about, I guess, the idea of this organization. It was established by wire hair poodle pointer guys, right? They wanted right. this particular test. Talk about the dynamics of a club that big. 10,000 people is a lot of members.
Yes, it is. And before we go much farther, I just do want to quickly say that I'm a judge in NAVDA, but I do not sit on the executive council, and therefore I'm not speaking for NAVDA. I'm just right. giving kind of my opinions and my interpretation of things. So it's kind of a disclaimer we have to give. So
100% fair. 100% fair.
So kind of the basic structure goes from you have the international organization in which has elected officers, 4 elected officers, president, treasurer, vice president, treasurer, and secretary, and then they appoint directors' positions. And then we also have some paid staff, and currently about, I want to say 3 years ago, could be a little more than that, we finally hired a managing director.
Oh, wow. That's huge.
Kind of help. Yeah, it was big to kind of help focus and get some of the workload off of the
Because if I understand it, it had been entirely volunteer run until that point.
We did have some paid office staff
okay.
for quite some time and people that help with the magazine and things like right. that. But yes, it's, you know, everything else is completely volunteer from the guy planting birds at a local chapter mm-hmm. to the president.
Yeah. And I mean, my personal experience, okay, I can just, mine is pretty limited. As I mentioned off air, I've never was involved in the organization of NAVDA. I just tested my dogs, but I always send my puppy buyers to NAVDA tests and NAVDA training. Because I found that non-competitive setting to be conducive to really having people help each other, right? That's what I've always loved about NAVDA.
100%. And it's most people only a couple years in have found a new group of lifelong friends.
Yeah.
It truly is. And people that get heavily invested in one another's success, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. really cool. And that's one of the things I think that makes NAVDA pretty unique is that although we're a testing and data organization, we have this foundation of people helping you train to accomplish that. So at the chapter level, you go in as a newbie and you'll be taken under the mm-hmm. wing of an experienced person pretty quickly and, mm-hmm. you know, start to show you the ins and outs of things. And then the next thing you know, you cancel your beach vacation because you want to go do duck searches somewhere.
Scummy cow pond in the kayak. Yes, indeed. You know what, Jake? I think that's part of it. The work, the testing is rigorous, right? The training to get a dog past, you know, anything other than a natural ability is really intense. And I have just nothing but mad respect for people that are going on. And you should also talk about the invitational that gives it some level of a competitiveness-ish that's different than just the regular test.
Yeah, so it's not competitive in the sense that it's dog versus dog. I mean, right. I think if you put two humans in a room, they can figure out a way of making something competitive. There could be True. Two cockroaches climbing up the wall and we'd be betting on which one was going to be faster. Right. But there's no real aspect of NAVDA that's competitive unless, you know, I've always looked at it as I'm competitive against myself, seeing what I can accomplish in the organization. Yeah. But the invitational is the highest level of testing. You have to acquire a prize one utility score in order to qualify for it. The Invitational has been growing pretty steadily mm-hmm. for quite some time. This year, I think there's the highest number of dogs ever, at over 200 dogs qualified. There was a time in which it was held every other year, every couple years, right. just to get 10 dogs.
Right, right.
Which speaks to both our training techniques and our breeding, you know? And that's really, to me, the really cool thing about NAVDA is that you can start to paint a picture of a dog with data. And if you really understand how to look at that data and value the data, you can see through lineage how you've increased the dog's desire mm-hmm. or increased their cooperation or their coat or any of the other things that we look at. But if you really look at it, the individual scores, you can better your breeding program with it for sure.
Yeah, love that. So talk a little bit. I know you said you're running to be president, right, of NAVDA. Talk about some of the things, you know, just at a club level, right? Such an enormous group of people that we can take and apply to smaller organizations, whether it's our National Parent Club or even our All Breed Dog Show Club, or, you know, whatever it is, people. Talk about some of those dynamics and some of the, if you will, quote unquote, good government type ideas that you're thinking about.
Yeah, well, I think that the chapter level is the strength of the organization. And I think we have to give the chapters the resources so that each member feels invested and feels like they're getting their money's worth, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And usually they're equal to then reinvest that energy once you do that. The people mm-hmm. I see kind of drift out in NAVDA, the turnover that I see, are people that never hooked up with the right group to make progress. And once you stop making progress with your dogs, you don't see the value in it anymore, and you just decide to give up or move on. And not everyone's going to want to push forward. I understand that. But I think that the strength of the chapters to be able to give resources so that people can advance and feel invested. People can give back. It's amazing how somebody that if you give new members even the littlest job, how invested they feel in the organization almost immediately. And so I think through those things, that's how we kind of strengthen and hold and maintain and build our membership.
See, I love that. So there's two things that I think. The investment, again, this applies to clubs in general. I'm not just talking about NAVDA. I'm talking all the way across the board. I was president of the Wirehair Pointer Club of America. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's plenty of places where these same principles apply. Members invested in the organization. And then talk to me about providing a benefit, right? Like, they're paying their dues. What are they getting out of it?
Right. And so I think that that's where we can improve a few things. We can give them better access to the data. Mm-hmm. So again, I said that creating accessible testing, quality judges to evaluate the dogs, because if we're not evaluating them all to the same standard, then our data starts to lose its value. Those are two major things that our international organization is in charge of, is housing the data, creating access to it, and then upholding the best level of judging possible. I'd like to see some more searchable data, be able to search it in ways that very specific things that you're looking for you could find, and do that a little bit easier. And the member portal has been a big improvement. It really has, to be able to access your own data. Even it used to be when I wanted to look at my own handler record, I had to email the office and they would send me my handler record. Now I can check it daily. I can check my judging record, how many dogs I've judged, all those things. But I'd like to be able to, and it, I don't know if you know, but the Epping-Gilbreton just got recognized in NAVDA as a separate breed. So just happening this year. And I worked with Lisa and the team at the registry committee to make that accomplish, and also the team at the CEBUS to accomplish that. But that excites me because now I actually can utilize some data. Yeah, I've been playing in NAVDA. I've been telling you how much I love the data, and I wasn't really able to utilize it because it was mixed in with a bunch of dogs that we really shouldn't be breeding too.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Purina is excited to tell you about the new My Purina app that lets you share with your puppy buyers. Using the app, pet owners can shop, earn points, and get rewarded for their purchases. Here's how it works. Pet owners download the My Purina app from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store on their mobile device. They also can sign up for an account and access the program's features online by visiting purina.com/mypurina-app. When pet owners buy everyday pet supplies like treats and ProPlan puppy and dog food, they can scan the receipts to earn rewards. Dog toys, food coupons, tote bags, bag dispensers, smart ID pet tags, and training clickers are just some of the great items available. The My Purina app supports puppy buyers and rewards them for being a super pet parent. They can find the formula that suits their pet's unique needs and explore the train and play content library for a bonding experience with their pet. Encourage your clients to join the app that brings pets and the Purina passion together. My Purina, where you shop, earn, and get rewarded. All right, you guys, I know I've been talking about this a lot, but I just want to make sure everybody hears about it. I know every pet owner out there has questions about their pet's health. The Marty and Laura Show is here to help. Hosted by Dr. Marty and I, the new podcast delivers fun, fact-based conversations about all things pet health, whether it's a runny puppy nose or a kitty cough. This show is really designed for your puppy buyers, for your friends, for your non-dog folks in your life, you know, your cousins, uncles, brothers, girlfriend. So feel free to share this on. We encourage you to use this as a great resource for the non-dog people in your life. Talk on. I know you love this topic, but that is a perfect segue into what I'm jacked up to talk about.
Okay.
which is the difference between the Epignol Breton and the Brittany. You know, as I say, the vast majority of my listeners are AKC people, but they're also rare breed people. And they are total rare breed geeks. So talk to us. Tell us about this.
Okay. And there are people that know this better than I, but I'm going to try and do my best to give the Cliff Notes version. So the long and the short of it is the Epignol Breton, the way you see it in the country, is the way it first existed in France. Shortly after World War I, some of the dogs made it over here. This is the belief. As field trials started to take off in this country, whether it was through selective breeding or the introduction of other dogs, you started to see the Brittany take a little different shape. They eliminated black coloration and they started to get a little bit bigger and leggier, have a different style of run to them, slightly different conformational standards. It's one of those things where on paper, it doesn't look that different. When you bring two dogs out, it doesn't take a trained eye to start picking them out as separate dogs very quickly, and especially in the way they run. You know, the French say that they should run like a pig, which means they should have a, a shorter...
The field trial guys definitely hate that. I'm just...
Right, would not want that, right? Exactly.
100%, that's a no.
So they should have a shorter, choppier stride. That comes from me, cobby, which means square. They're as tall at the withers as they are long. Mm-hmm. And so they should move in that manner that's a bit different.
That is definitely diametrically opposed to the Brittany. I judge Brittany's in the show ring and the standard of tremendous reach and, you know, that huge stride almost eclipses everything else they talk about in the standard. So to have that enormous difference. So if you look at them just side by side, a Brittany and an Epignol, is it more spaniel-y? I mean, Epignol is basically spaniel in the language.
There's
so
ways in which it's more spaniel-y, probably more along the lines of Springer than anything else, kind of.
And like you'll towards see a little Welsh Springer kind of end of it.
Yep. I get the question a lot, especially when I first started on the campaign to have them separated, that, well, are they genetically different?
Right. Yeah. No, that is a really good question.
Which the easiest way of explaining the answer to me is what you see is an expression of genetics, right? So if you can clearly pick out the difference, two different sets of conformational standards makes them genetically different. Because if they were genetically the same, you wouldn't have two different sets of standards. And the same with the movement. That's all, you know, as somebody that judges, like the way you're built is the way you move. So
I do presentations on this. The way you're built is the way you move. 100%.
Yep.
Interesting. And are they then heavier, like heavier boned, heavier bodied, and still square? Or how is that?
There's getting to be some variation in that. I would have loved to have been around 60 years ago to see if there was the same variation there is now. And I'm curious to see where they'll be in a few more years. It's interesting when they're now getting evaluated quite a bit in a field trial setting. It's one of the things I, again, like about having them evaluated in NAVDA, because I think it's more suited for what they should be and should stay. You know, you start taking them out and you start trying to compete against all-age American Brittany's, and you're going to have to turn them into one to win.
This is not a unique conversation, right? So the DD versus the wire hair, or what many people believe the wire hair pointer traditionally was, which is a foot hunting gun dog versus the all-age dog that a lot of the trial guys want. And I get it. I've had this conversation with Ray Cawkins more times than I care to discuss. Right. Now, if you happen to like a field trial dog, well, then, you know, that's a whole nother thing. I always said If I was going to trial for real and full time, I'd just go get a field bred English setter and do it that way, because that's what they're bred to do, right?
Right.
That's their job.
And they're beautiful, beautiful
they're
to watch doing it.
Those little Llewellyn setters, I just think are spectacular.
Yeah. Not to get off down a rabbit hole here, but my one friend
that
I traveled
a lot of rabbit holes here.
That I travel the country with, he has had a red setter, a Llewellyn, mm-hmm. and Gordons, and I so enjoy hunting behind those dogs. It's just their movement is so fluid and beautiful.
Yeah.
I always say, I don't care what breed dog you have, if you don't like that, there's something wrong.
There's something wrong. We had, when I was a kid, my very first purebred dog of my own was an English setter. You know, we collected them for a while, and my dad ran across some dog. It was a Laverick Llewellyn cross.
Okay.
So it was bigger than your average Llewellyn, big, tall dog, but coated like a Llewellyn, kind of a Llewellyn head. And that dog, I am here to tell you, could flat out cover ground. He was amazing. So anyway, sorry, rabbit hole.
Nope.
So, I mean, that's a whole process in itself. And is there discussion or is there consideration amongst your group about going towards like the FSS, the Foundation Stock Service, and AKC to recognize it as a separate breed?
So currently we are recognized through the American Brittany Club.
Oh, okay.
And so there is a lot of discussion between the American Brittany Club and the French Brittany Club mm-hmm. over separation constantly. Mm-hmm. The CEB US's stance currently is they do not want separate recognition in the AKC, which is extremely complicated and political. And it's for the right reasons, but at face value, you're like, wait a minute, you wanted separation in NAVDA, you wanted separation here, you wanted separation there. Why don't you want it in the AKC? But it has a lot to do with who then governs and mm-hmm. the breed and mm-hmm. everything mm-hmm. else. And fear, I think the fear is that if you end up with two separate people governing the same breed, you're going to be back to two different breeds.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And so one other piece that I wanted to go back to, the Epagnol can have black dogs, right? So the AKC Brittany is red and white or liver and white, no black and white. Is that another difference between the two?
Yeah, so we can have orange and white, liver and white,
orange.
Liver tricolor, and then orange tricolor and black and white. So
okay. The orange and the liver stays and add black and white. Do you get a black tricolor?
So black, orange, and white, yes.
Yeah. Yep. Tricolor that way. Okay.
Yep. So I've had a couple of them.
Fascinating.
Which, talk about no one ever being able to guess what breed dog you have. We've gotten everything from Rottweiler. When somebody walks up and goes, is that a French Brittany? I'm like, whoa.
So that's the easy distinction, is the Brittany and the French Brittany.
Yeah, because they're going to have black nose, black lips, black mm-hmm. eyelids, mm-hmm. and it can have black on their pads, black toenails. Mm-hmm. So even the orange and whites are going to have black nose, black eyelids, black.
Oh, interesting.
So there's some allowable stuff where if the entire nose is surrounded by orange hair, then the pigment can be lighter than specific black, but it's never going to look like the pink nose of an American Brittany.
Of an American
pink
Brittany.
Lips or eyelids, yeah. That's the quickest, easiest way
telltale.
To really pick out
black
everyone.
Nose, it's going to be a French Brittany.
Yep. Huh. And they usually have a little bit shorter snout, a little more aggressively stopped forehead mm-hmm. than what you
Well,
what
just
you
the photo,
see.
Like that illustration behind you, to me, that looks more like a Spaniel than it does like a Brittany.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, look, that's part of their breed.
Right. So, right.
Yep. They took the Spaniels and started hesitating before they flushed.
You know, it's like pointing labs. It's the same. I mean, you know, the concept of a hesitation. My folks had Clumber Spaniels, and my dad was the field chairman for the Clumber Spaniel Club. And he actually wrote the hunting standards. So the Spaniel Hunt Test Program has hunting standards for each breed. And that hesitation flush, right, is a big no-no for the Springer guys. It's really normal for a Clumber. Very, very normal. And so he wrote that into the standard.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
So, yeah, there are Spaniels who have that hesitation flush
yeah.
as just sort of part of their DNA.
I've been around a few flushers here and there, and it's interesting, the ones that have it. It doesn't really make them any less of a dog, but ideally...
No, they're great bird dogs. I think it's really fascinating that the origin story of Clumbers being sort of in the mists of time, now I've got my conspiracy theory hat on. The hesitation flush of the Clumbers. Clumbers came from France to England.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So there you go. There you go. I'm fascinated by that. Okay. Well, Jake, final question for you. Back to the club stuff, because that was really what we wanted to talk about. So, you know, when you think about being a president of an organization of that size, right, kind of hit your top three priorities, right? The access to the testing data, more involvement or enhanced involvement with the membership. What would be your third one?
Well, I guess part of the membership is to have a complete transparent communication with them. I think they deserve to know exactly where the organization's at all times and not have to ask for it. Have it be provided and put out there. I want to see financial strength in the organization. Having money gives you resources that allows you to do more. And then just absolutely upholding our mission, mission first by all stretch. I think that's done through building teams of great people. Nobody has to do the job alone. For a living, I project manage, and I can't build a house or build a casino or build anything else without teams and upon teams of great, talented people. And with 10,000 members, we have an unbelievable amount of very talented people in very specific fields, and most of which are willing to do it for the organization.
See, I'm telling you, that is a wealth of resources. I envy. You guys are well placed in that position. Well, you know, what you've elucidated is absolutely what any club anywhere of any kind should have these as priorities. I mean, they're pretty basic. So I think that anybody out there in listener land, if you're involved with a club or want to be, I think that's a platform you can run on.
Yeah. Sometimes it just have to get back to the basics, right?
Yeah, it is. It is 100% basics. All right, Jake, thanks so much. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate the chance to talk to you about dogs, and I wish you luck.
I appreciate you having me on. I really enjoyed it, Laura.
Hey, guys, I am super excited about this. Marty and I have been working on a brand new series of seminars that we're bringing to the Dog Fancy, called Pedigrees to Pups, and we are launching it with sort of a taste test on June 13th here in Grants Pass, Oregon, my hometown, with my local dog show. We are bringing together the art and the science of dog breeding in one place, and we're so excited. We're going to talk everything from selecting your foundation bitch and stud dog, to reading pedigrees and breeding theory, to mating and whelping. The event here in Grants Pass is a short little overview, 3 hours before the dog show starts. And on the weekend of September 5th in Hawaii, we will have a 3-day seminar. And the following weekend in Wisconsin, we'll have another 2-day seminar. And so if you're really interested in doing a deep dive, you want to hang out with Marty and I, ask questions, get one-on-one advice, up close and personal mentoring, this is the way to do it. Stop by puredogtalk.com, go to the events page, and you will find out about the event in June. And we'll keep it updated as we have details on the events in Hawaii and Wisconsin. We look forward to seeing you guys there and cannot wait to kick off this seminar series. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.